Welcome back to the Inside the Cross Pro Lacrosse Podcast. I'm Kyle Devitt, the gear and lifestyle editor for Inside the Cross. And today I'm joined, as always, by
Chris Rosenthal, Inside the Cross freelance contributor and pro lacrosse analyst.
That's right. And we got an all MLL week for you because the PLL went on a bye week. Try to collect their thoughts a little bit, try and get ready for the next phase of their season. Meanwhile, we had four MLL games to contend with. The first game, the Boston Cannons 16, the Denver Outlaws 13. Pardon the pun, but the Outlaws could not get their gun out of the holster. Despite outshooting the Cannons 29-22, their offense throughout the game struggled to get good looks and resorted to a lot of one-on-one that was met with a ready Cannons defense, a prompt slide, and a full rotation. Even the Outlaws' man up looked bad when they had their chances, and this game was pretty chippy, so they had plenty of chances. I think the Cannons just put home most of theirs, and the Outlaws couldn't make the most of it. Dylan Ward getting pulled after the first seven shots turned into seven goals for the Cannons. Kind of a rough start. You watched some of this. What did you think, Chris?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely agree with you on that rough start. You know, he was not put into ideal situations, but he was put into situations that typically he can kind of pull off. And, you know, I mean, you know, it happens for goalies sometimes. Even the best goalies just have bad days. And this was one for him, and they yanked him. And, you know, it wasn't really a surprise at that point. You know, you had to make a move at that point, I think.
Yeah, we talked a little bit about the chippiness, but I feel like the last two games for the Outlaws, it's like infecting them, and it's really becoming a problem. I don't know if it's just that teams play super physical against them and they just can't accept it or what, but as long as Denver is racking up penalties, they're going to keep losing. Do you have a theory on what it is, really?
No, I mean, I think all teams, if not all, definitely most teams reach a point in their season that's kind of a little bit more mentally taxing. And I feel like maybe Denver as a whole has just kind of reached that point. You know, you get in a situation like if you ever have like a roommate or something like that, even if they're doing normal stuff, like you can't see them brush their teeth another day, or you know what I mean? Like they're eating, you know, Cheez-Its, and for whatever reason, that's just the thing that's going to set you off. I feel like the Outlaws are just kind of at that point in their season.
I really want to tell a roommate story, but it makes me sound like a monster. Should I do it anyway?
Why not?
All right. My freshman year, I shared a room with this kid. I'm not going to share his name, but he was a very sickly individual. You know that kid on the floor that was always sick, like the whole year? And you're like, why are you still sick? It's like April. You should be better now. That was my roommate, and I went through it for, you know, the first semester, didn't say anything. Most of the second semester. And then one night, he's just hacking up a lung in the corner. He's by the window, and I just rolled over middle of the night. It's like 1 a.m. I'm like, listen, if you can't find some medicine to get better, and if you can't shut up, I'm going to throw you out of the window. And we were on the fourth floor. So I feel like it's a little threatening, but I was half kidding, but also I was just frustrated. I wasn't actually going to do it. But man, what a great analogy to what this team feels like watching them play. So I relate to that frustration turning into like irrational anger. And speaking of which, you know, Zach Currier from the Outlaws, one of their star players, ranked on our top 20, had one assist here, was blanked last week. I'm going to ask you what everyone's been asking me without actually saying it. Were we wrong to rank Zach Currier as high as we did in the top 20, because he has five times as many penalty minutes as he does points in his last two games? How worried are we about Kurt?
So first of all, I don't think we were wrong to rank him so high. I don't regret that one bit. I think we were right to do it. He had contributed at least 2 points in every single game this season, every single game of his career. And then, you know, plus he has his ground ball work and his wing contributions and additional factors like that. So when we made the list, he had had that one game where he scored 0 points. But if he puts one of those games up and then we have to make the list, I mean, are we going to assume that the total in his future games goes back up to where it's been literally every game he's ever played? You know, that's where I think we would go. You know, this one, okay, so he didn't get back there again. I guess if we were to make the list, you know, next week, he would probably be lower. But, you know, as a reflection on things that had happened up to that point of the season, I'm still fine with where we put him.
Let's talk a little bit about the Cannons. Great games here from Will Sands, his second great game in a row. 3 goals, 3 assists. And Nick Morocco, again, having a stellar effort, 16 saves and goal. This win puts Boston in a tie for first place, which is something I never thought I would say given their past few seasons. I think my theory here is that their roster consistency is the key to their success this season, because they were arguably the least affected by players leaving for the PLL. Does that kind of jive with what you're thinking here?
Yeah, I've got a couple additional sort of theories. First of all, Sands being healthy for a continued amount of time, just the, having the healthy quarterback, you know, makes the world of difference.
Yeah.
I would also just say they're one of the teams that benefited from like the NLL and MLL non-overlap. You know, you get like Zed Williams in there for, you know, and you know, he can kind of do his thing instead of trying to, you know, operate under a compressed schedule. You know, same with Kyle Jackson, you know, they can really kind of strengthen their midfield play. And then, you know, I think I just have to credit the front office a little bit. You know, they've, all the draft picks were very sketchy this year. You know, who knows who's actually showing up? Who knows who's doing what? And, you know, I mean, they pulled off getting Zach Goodrich in there, and they pulled off Rylan Reese being in there as well. You know, those are players who have contributed in serious major fashions for them. So, I mean, I think it's all of those things.
Yeah, you mentioned Rylan Reese. Went down late in this one with what appeared to be a fairly serious knee injury. Today I reached out to Coach Quirk, and he said that Rylan will be reevaluated later in the week. This could potentially be devastating to that Boston defense. They were just getting used to steady output from him. He was getting better every game from, you know, playing on the wing, handling things in transition and dealing with defenders up top and kind of learning how to funnel them in a better way in the pro system. So let's hope that he's all right going forward. Man, and listen, if you're going into your freshman year, this is going to go back to my story, and you go into your room the first day and the dude or not dude female is sick, get a room change that right that second. You don't want to live with it. It was like living without sleep for the first time in my life, and then it just carried over to the rest of my life, and it was awful. So get out of there while you can. Let's go on to the next game. Oh my. Oh my. The Dallas Rattlers 16, the Atlanta Blaze 14. That's win number 2 for the Rattlers. 2-7. Man, the Blaze are going to be heated, pardon the pun, when they watch this game back on tape. Forget that their defense played legitimately terrible. A key goal from Brian Cole with under 5 minutes left was ruled interference with the goalie after he was shoved into the net on his way to the cage, clearly blatantly shoved by a defender. Really, really horrible call. Ball gets turned over. Dallas goes right back the other way and scores. They went up by, Dallas was up by 3 goals at that point and basically killed the game, even though Woodall won almost every faceoff he took on the day. This was a legitimate bad performance by the Blaze. The most unfortunate thing, though, is that now they have to set fire, again with the fire puns, I'm really sorry, to their brand new all-yellow unis as a result, because there's no way that they can go back to wearing those after playing like this.
No, that's a shame, but, you know, you got to do what you got to do. And when I think the rule goes, if you break out brand new gear and you suffer a loss, or like in this case, like almost like a weird sort of haunted loss where weird stuff happens, or, you know, you get screwed by the officials or whatnot.
Yeah.
You know, you got to just collect them all up, toss them in a pile, and, you know, move on with your life.
Yeah. Have a barbecue. That being said, I think, you know, Dallas deserved to win, but I don't think they had a great performance per se. 16 goals is a season high output from Dallas and could be a sign of things to come, as long as the next few defenses they play refuse to slide and also jog off the field on turnovers. I don't mean to shade Dallas, because in this case, they definitely don't deserve to be shaded. But I'm happy to lob sticky grenades at the Atlanta defense, because they were a horror show. What did you take away from the parts of this game that you watched?
It was just such a, I guess, reluctance to, like I guess, like you said, like the refusing to slide. If you just can't get beat this many times from X,
yeah,
without offering a plan B. You know, there's only so much. If you are facing an X attackman who has a speed advantage over your X defender covering him, he's not going to get, like, your defender isn't going to get faster in the second quarter.
Right.
Or the third quarter. You gotta bring something else to the table. And he can try as much as he can, but it's just too simple. It's just, I'm going to move my feet, see if you can keep up. And if you can't, you know, bless his heart, there's nothing he can do about it. They have to put some other situation in place. So, I mean, if you are going to get beat by the Rattlers, you know, hey, Outlaws got beat by the Rattlers as well. You can get beat by them, but you can't let them or any other team just keep doing the same thing over and over to you.
I think teams are legit underestimating them. You know, the game, the goal that sealed the game for them came from Wittenberg from the Rattlers ISOing an X on Camizio, and Camizio's done a great job, but Wittenberg looks like he's, like, compared to Camizio, he looks like he's like 6'5". He's probably only like 6'2", but Camizio's only like 5'8". And Camizio's doing his all. Wittenberg scores with a weird backhand that used Camizio as a screen. And after the ball goes in, you see Camizio turn and be like, where? There was no slide anywhere. No one even tried to help him. And he just throws his hands up. Like, what do you want me to do? I did everything I could. He played great defense. Sometimes you play great defense and you still get scored on. For the Blaze, no Randy Stats here. We may not see him for another week or two as he is dealing with a lower body injury. Again, I don't think his absence on the offense was a problem per se. But they did have more than their fair share of one bad shot and done possessions. That cannot happen with an attack in midfield this talented. This was Mark Matthews' debut for the Blaze after being released by the Lizards earlier this season. What did you see out of him here?
So the thing about Mark Matthews in this one, you know, he's kind of, you know, he did have some possessions where it was kind of him hanging on to it and looking to figure out what to do. You know, you could tell he was a talented player who just joined a team he hasn't been working with. I think that was sort of the evident thing by watching him play. He did hand out 3 assists, I believe. But the weird thing about Mark Matthews, and I don't know if this is a product of his personality or a product of the situations he's placed in, whatever he is now, I don't think is necessarily going to have anything to do with what he is in a few weeks when they do see Randy Stotts back in the lineup. Because when those two played previously, when they were on the Rattlers, actually, you know, Stotts did more carrying, and Matthews was pretty much just a finisher. And, you know, Matthews is not inherently a finisher. You know, you watch, like, his indoor play or something like that. He's a very, very prolific distributor. So, I mean, this game, he was more distributor. You know, when they have them both in the lineup, which is going to be, you know, like, their ideal situation moving forward, you know, I guess the ideal situation is going to be he does some of the work. Maybe he'll be like the Stotts. So I guess this is weird to say. So Randy Stotts now isn't the Stotts for the Rattlers. You know, that's like, he's the number one now. He was like the number two in previous times with the Rattlers or the Blaze.
Right.
So as weird as it might sound, maybe Matthews in a few weeks might be their Stotts, whereas, but not the current Stotts. Does that make sense?
Kind of. I mean, for me, like, Matthews didn't even really play attack. He ran on as the first midfielder and, like, ran off. And like you were saying, like, he's not a – in the MLL, he is not a ball carrier. That doesn't mean he can't carry the ball. I feel like he probably should have seen more of the ball, if anything. But some of his passes are – some of the indoor guys, when they come to field, don't get the spacing right because they're used to tighter spacing. And they're also used to guys being able to basically catch anything. You know, I'm convinced right. that, like, Canadian dudes just, like, do that scene from The Karate Kid where they try to catch a fly with chopsticks all the time. Because that's how good every single player in the NLL's hands are probably better than half of the MLL. Right? Just by virtue of how that game is played, how long they grew up playing it. They're, you could say the negative portion of that, if you want to say that, is that they're only using their dominant hand, but it doesn't matter, in my opinion. So I think that adjustment period for Matthews is you need some patience with it. Like, he had a couple really clever passes that guys just flat out were not ready for. And also you have Shane Jackson kind of playing in his spot, another Canadian, on that low kind of block. And then Matthews just kind of got jammed into the low crease or floated on the high crease waiting to get the ball to do something with it. You know, so I think they just – the Blaze have this weird embarrassment of riches on offense that I feel like enables them to play the way they do, which is very non-possession friendly, shall we say. But when they are not hitting shots, they look legitimately bad. And this was one of those games. And then, listen, Dallas got out-ground balled here and still won because Dallas stretched their possessions with smart shots. They drew really bad push fouls, and they got shot clock resets. And they just kept doing it over and over because they couldn't win faceoffs, and they couldn't get GBs, and they couldn't force turnovers. So what did they do? They adjusted. You know, and I think if I'm going to give them any measure of, like, high-level credit, that's going to be the greatest compliment I can pay, is that they adjusted and the Blaze did not, and the Blaze lost because of it. Another, I think the Blaze and the Outlaws are similar in that, like, their emotions are really getting the better of them, and it's really costing them wins, and that's not how it should be. You're pros. Suck it up. Like, you got checked too hard? Too bad. You're not playing in men's league. You know, soak it and get the guy back later. Like, that's how it works. That's how pros work. You know? Just my advice. And it's not the first time I've said that, by the way, on this podcast. I'm pretty sure I said it, like, 2 weeks ago in the exact same situation. But let's move on to the next pair of games. I guess we'll talk about them one-on-one, but similar results. Chesapeake Bayhawks 11, New York Lizards 9. The Bayhawks leaned heavily in this first matchup between these two teams on a 6-goal performance from Colin Heacock to basically carry them. At one point in the game, the Bayhawks failed to score for over 20 minutes of clock. And they still managed to win. My conclusion from this, the Lizards are toast. They had so many chances to steal this game from the Bayhawks, and they just couldn't do it. The broadcasting crew was giving a lot of credit to Nico Amato, but man, in my opinion, New York just taking some seriously dumb shots. Chris, do you share my opinion that the Lizards are finito?
Yeah, you know, I mean, just the way that the schedule breaks out and everything like that, it doesn't look great. You know, there are, I think what we've kind of noticed, especially in the past few weeks, is that everybody's capable of losing to anybody. You know what I mean? There's no gimme on a Lizard schedule. So, I mean, strictly from that sort of standpoint, they sure look done.
Yeah, it's not pretty. What do you think this win means for a guy like Heacock, who had a career-high 6 goals going forward? Is he definitely going to be playing down low from now on? Hint, yes, he should be. Or are we going to see the Bayhawks move him around again? Because, again, I would like to see him in that natural position, kind of going at guys off the catch, and Lyle and Stanwyck feeding him for opportunities to just step down and ruin goalies' lives.
Yeah, so, I mean, I like him at attack as well, especially since, like, I can't imagine he's going to get as much short stick coverage as he got running out the midfield this weekend, because, obviously, as we can tell, the short stick coverage didn't work out great for the people trying to stop him. I think he should just stay attack, but I think kind of the Bayhawks' issue is they have a couple other people in that lefty spot. It's a very, very heavily lefty team. And I think maybe they feel some of their other people are less versatile than Heacock, which is like kind of a double-edged sword. He's going to get pushed around because they know he's capable of doing more. You know, obviously, I think it would be great to keep him in one spot, but if he's, you know, A-plus attackman and a B-plus midfielder, and, you know, somebody else who could take his spot is like a, you know, A or B attackman and like a D-minus midfielder, then Heacock's going to get bumped, even though it's not best for Heacock. Obviously, like, 6 goals is a crazy amount for him, but I do think this is more the Colin Heacock we expected to see heading into the season. You know, especially like just the way he played last year, you know, he led the team in scoring, just a very dominant offensive presence. And he kind of had some cold weeks earlier, maybe a product of moving around a little bit too much. But he's definitely capable of doing this sort of thing moving forward, especially if they keep him in this sort of ideal situation. I really liked the whole trio with him, Lyle and Steele. I thought that worked really well together.
Yeah, Lyle, 2-1 here, had a little bit of a knock, took a knee to his thigh. People were worried if he was going to play the next day in the back-to-back here, and he managed to. But with so many guys going down injured, I think if anybody's in a position to deal with that and just plug guys in, it's Chesapeake, because they've gotten production from guys like D2 guy like Andrew Q out of Tampa. You've got John Wagner, who played great in both of these games, from Marquette, making an impact. Shane Simpson coming in, throwing a little bit of a little Canadian flair in there. I think that they're so versatile on offense. And obviously, Nick Mariano, how can you forget his kind of playmaking ability? And again, he's one of those guys that, where does he fit? Some games he only gets a couple assists, and some games he goes off for 4, 5, 6 points. I think it's a matter of scout and game plan, but the Bayhawks really, we're talking about teams that, you know, we're not sure who wants to win the MLL championship right now. Look at the standings, because it's just teams just dropping games and not stepping on necks like they should be. But I think the Bayhawks are uniquely qualified to get to that playoff spot. Let's just go into the second game, which took place on Sunday. Man, Chesapeake Bayhawks 24, New York Lizards 7. Earlier I said that the Lizards are toast. They are not toast. They are burnt toast that smells up your entire domicile till you air it out. I don't even want to talk about this game. It was a complete and utter destruction of everything that the Lizards and, frankly, New York sports have ever stood for. So, of course, as a lifelong New England sports fan, I did derive some sick form of schadenfreude pleasure from this result. Like, you can get mad at that, but, like, you can get mad when the scorpion stings you. You know, you can't carry him on your back across the water. You know, he's going to sting it. That's what's going to happen. And this was bad. This was an atrocity in many ways for the Lizards. My question to you is this. Did we learn anything from this game?
I mean, I feel like there is a breaking point in blowouts where you probably stop learning things that actually apply to game situations. You know, you might learn things about personalities, you know, or like, oh, is this guy gonna, you know, they've had some issues where, you know, people kind of got a little rough at the end and started pushing around and things like that. All right, so maybe you know who gets sick of getting stumped and wants to swing or something like that. But, I mean, do we really care as far as the rest of their season goes who swings when they get mad? No, that doesn't really apply to, generally speaking, lacrosse at all. So, I mean, we didn't learn a lot. We learned what we kind of suspected about Chesapeake, that their offense is very deep. And, you know, even if, you know, Lyle Thompson isn't producing, like, you know, 9 points or something like that, you can still get these games from guys like, you know, you mentioned Q and you mentioned Simpson. You know, Matt Abbott can pop back up sometime. There are just, there's so many people to have to account for. And, I mean, also a reason I think we may not have learned that much from this is we might not have situations this often where a team finishes playing and then they all get on buses or, you know, they stay in the hotel, hop on and then go drive up, you know, 5 hours or whatever and play another game. So, I mean, maybe we learned that New York is significantly worse at that situation than the Bayhawks. But if we had to learn something, I would say just the main lesson, there are distinct tiers and these guys are occupying different tiers right now.
Yeah, I want to give a shout-out to Kenny Massa for the Bayhawks faceoff guy. He won almost 80% of his draws in both these games put together. Not an easy feat, especially since the Lizards dressed two faceoff guys in the second game to try and counteract him, and he actually did even better. So, didn't work out for you. Dylan Malloy, All-Star Game MVP, went down in this game with a leg injury. I did some checking, and I can say that it appears to be a pulled hamstring, so he's another player that will be reevaluated later in the week. I think for some coaches when they tell me that, or people that are involved with teams that tell me that, that's kind of like a cover for he's not playing. Sometimes it's just he might show up anyway. Regardless, lots of guys going down with injuries this week. Is that a coincidence or is like something happening? Are we hitting a wall here? Because this MLS season is long. It is long. And unlike their competition, the PLL, they're not taking bye weeks. They're just going straight through. I mean, what other reason would you play three Bayhawks Lizards games in 2 weeks? It's like no reason to do that.
No. Yeah, that's an insane, you know, scheduling after effect that's just ridiculous and weird. And I think it went kind of like how we thought it was going to go. Remember, we discussed this on the last podcast. It's like, yeah, somebody's going to start shoving somebody else. You know, it was actually less violent and, you know, conflict heavy than I thought it might be at this point. And also, especially if, you know, you're getting tripled up by your opponent. But as far as the injury thing, you know, there definitely could be something to this sort of drawing things out without as much of a pause or a break or anything like that. You know, I mean, it definitely depends on the injury or whatnot. I mean, we'll see what happens with Malloy. Any sort of soft tissue kind of stuff, I get suspicious that, you know, maybe it's, you know, just kind of a product of a little bit too much mileage on it. But, you know, again, the way that we're given information about this sort of thing, you know, he might be there next week. You know, he might be there next game and look fine. So we'll see.
Yeah, it's I think it's interesting that players are getting game misconducts and like not getting kicked out of games and not serving suspensions. Like, what are we doing? You know how you fix all this like chicanery, guys? MLL League Office? You just suspend the guys if they get a game misconduct. I'm pretty sure you're supposed to get suspended for a game misconduct anyway. I guess they're just choosing not to enforce it or what? But I mean, Shane Simpson and Kevin Crowley got game misconducts. Courier got a game misconduct in the Boston game. I don't understand what we're doing here. Like, what are the rules for? If you're going to give that penalty, that guy's got to sit out the rest of the game. And guys are like coming back in when it happens. Like, what are we doing? What's the structure here? I don't know. There's just, this weekend was just full of more questions and less answers. I got no answers to anything. Did you?
No. I mean, anything I might have thought was, you know, quickly kind of shaken up. And yeah, this like this weekend happened and all of the, you know, results count. But, you know, if you wanted to ball this whole weekend up and throw it away, I think that would be fine moving forward. I don't think there's too much we can take from it.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Look out for the Rattlers, I guess. Is that the main lesson from the weekend?
I mean, maybe.
Freaking Rattlers? I guess that's it.
I mean, at least they did put on Twitter that they're on a 2-game win streak, which I really appreciated. I'm pretty sure it has to be 3 to be a streak. 2 is like happenstance. 3 is a streak. But listen, you do you. I just, like, it's not a matter of me wanting the games to fit a narrative. It's me wanting a narrative, period. There is no narrative to what's happening. Like, good players are playing bad. Teams that were terrible for 5 weeks are now playing well. Teams that were dominating teams are playing poorly now. Like, there's no real rhyme or reason here to anything. Speaking of which, we're going to move on to our big question this week. First of all, I want to thank everyone that voted in the Twitter poll to determine what our next big concept piece will be. Chris, you want to announce the winner? This is where I get Dan to put in a drum roll, but he's not going to do it.
Right. I was going to say, do we have to do it ourselves? Like a little brr.
Yeah, ready? And the winner is...
Ladies and gentlemen, those of you who voted, your winning piece is PLL teams as Michael Bay movies.
Wow. That is that's going to be a fun mixtape. That's what I'm done with calling them collabs. I'm just going to call them mixtapes from now on. When you and I like both write stuff and we're going to get to that PLL teams as Michael Bay movies very soon. Not immediately, because this is Lake Placid week, and that means I get a quote-unquote working vacation. I believe that's the right term. We are going to talk about our top 20 list. Where to start? Hashtag Team Whatabout. Chris, let's talk about Team Whatabout. What are some guys that we had ranked that, through our discussions, didn't make it?
So kind of like the honorable mentions, guys who were like almost there.
Yeah, let's be weak-minded and just do that. Let's give the people what they want. We don't want to do this, but you guys asked for it. We're here for you. We'll tell you what our thought process were.
Okay, so somebody who just barely didn't make it. Let's say Will Manny,
yeah,
for the Archers was one of the first teams out. I guess is the bracketology terminology for that.
Yeah, he was a bubble guy. We had him on the list for a long time. One of the reasons we took him off is because we already had, and this is not a parody thing. It's just a matter of like common sense. We already had 3 other Archers players in there, and the Archers are not doing well. So if we put 4 Archers players on our top 20, and then we look at their record and we go, oops, kind of doesn't make any sense. We also debated where to put Holman and if we should put Eric Law in there. And ultimately, I think we went with stats over style. Is that fair? For that exclusion, not for the Holman pick, but for Eric Law almost being there, not quite kind of thing, right?
Yeah, I'd say so. I do think what I enjoyed about the process was kind of approaching everything differently, not having to use the same sort of template for everyone,
right.
You know, especially different positions, things like that. You know, contributions, I think a lot of stuff came down to eyeball tests and things like that. But in this particular case, I do agree that, yeah, the stats was the way to go.
I do think it's funny, and I think people might be interested in this. Our 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 were exactly the same when we exchanged lists the first time without seeing each other's list. And that top 5 didn't end up being our final top 5. So for those of you that, you know, don't have the article handy, we had We both had Tom Schreiber at one, Lyle Thompson at two, Matt Rambo at three, and Randy Stats at four. But the fifth player that we ended up moving down on the list, because we went into Stats a little bit more in the kind of third draft, was Connor Fields, who was at five originally on both our lists. But then we kind of went through and I just put a search in for turnovers, and lo and behold, he leads the league in turnovers. Now, I will say that I spoke to the Chaos head coach, Andy Towers, for another article I'm writing for the magazine, and kind of told him that was my thought process with Fields. And he's like, listen, Fields gets a lot of those turnovers because the ball's in his stick at the end of the shot clock and he has to try and make something happen. And Towers is right. But that's not 100% of the time true. It's true more often than you think. But I would say less than half of his turnovers are because of that. Right? So I still feel like seven's good. That's not, it's not like we shaded him terribly with seven, right?
Right, yeah. I don't think being, you know, named the seventh best professional lacrosse player right now is, you know, the worst thing that can happen to anybody. I do understand where, you know, Towers is coming from. And you say, yeah, okay, certain players are going to get the ball late in the clock, right? Or certain players, you know, maybe they'll start off the rotation, but then if their teammates don't have anything, they'll kind of be the escape hatch, right? We do know that, but there are generally one or guys on each team with that responsibility. You know, that's not a uniquely Connor Fields situation. I think years ago we were talking the same sort of situation about Rob Pinnell,
right?
You know, turning the ball over. But, you know, yeah, if he's going to get it with 5 seconds left because, you know, the midfielders couldn't make anything happen on that possession, you know, yeah, that's going to affect it. But I think we are kind of mindful that just players have those roles on each team.
Yeah, we also got called out for trying to make the list even with 5 and 5 in the top 10, and we didn't even notice. Honestly, like, you're not going to believe that. But making the list, we don't care what league you play in. You know, it also, like, if we're talking about bias, the only bias I think that played into this is our history with all these players, regardless of what league they play in now versus where they played before. I think it's really is a list of the moment. And honestly, looking it over, it's probably already obsolete with some of the results from this past weekend and how bad some of these guys played. You know what I mean? And how well some of them played. Like, I feel like Cole moves up and Courier moves down. I feel like Fields moves up even though he didn't play, and Pinnell just moves down because his team got waxed. You know? But it's not a fluid thing. It was a make a snapshot of what you think in this time period. And we try to do the best with that. Let's talk about goalies. We had some people disagreeing with the pick for Jack Kincannon, and Chris will be the first to back me up on this. I didn't think we should rank any of them. And the reason, this is how I know people don't read the list, is I basically said that in the write-up, and how there are so many goalies that are, listen, they're playing at a high level, they're playing quote-unquote great, but the consistency is the thing that is missing for a lot of them in terms of a guy that is literally unbeatable. I don't think there is a goalie in pro lacrosse right now that's unbeatable. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, almost by virtue of the position.
Yeah, and I think the reason we went with Concannon, and Chris, I'll give you credit, you wrote this part, he had a 20-save performance in his first game. Like, he was a backup last year in the MLL, and now he's starting on a team with, like, all these, the Atlas, all these superstars, Cher Baptiste, Connor Busick, Eric Law, Paul Rabel, Tucker Durkin, you've got all these guys that are, like, basically modern legends, and he's like a guy that was a backup, and everyone thought Scotty Rogers would be the starting goalie, and then Concannon shows up to camp and, like, balls out and wins the starting spot and has played well in that area. And one of the things that got tweeted at us by Whipsnakes goalie Kyle Bernlohr, I see you and I read your ass, hashtag make stats matter again. First of all, I don't like the nomenclature you're using there or the phrasing. It's problematic for me. Second of all, I think you mean average stats matter, because you're using averages as your point, right? Isn't that what we're doing there? We picked Concannon because Concannon had the highest of the highs in terms of the goalies that we saw. You know, he had that opening performance. He's the All-Star Game MVP. He had another performance where he had 20-plus saves. That's just what put him over the edge. And honestly, we shouldn't have ranked goalies. But we wanted to be fair. And by we, I mean Chris. I don't care about being fair. We put in a goalie. That's the choice we made. And we're sticking with it. Is there going to be a goalie in the next top 20? I don't know. We'll see. I think if there's any goalie that's like might crack in here that's like really carrying their team in the last couple weeks, it's Nick Morocco from the Canucks, because he is crushing it. And his defense is doing a lot in front of him, and they're much improved, but he's still making 15-plus saves game in, game out for that Canucks team. Another guy we debated here, and this was a kind of a style thing, was Mark Cogerton versus Shane Jackson. And the compromise we made was I wanted Cogerton and Chris wanted Shane Jackson. And they're very similar players. They have very similar numbers. I think Cogerton means a little bit more to his team than Shane Jackson does in terms of what they do and how the team operates in the offense. I think Shane Jackson is great and gets a lot of goals from finishing, and his finishing is great. But I think Cogerton's got a little bit more range and means a little bit more to the Canucks overall. What was the do you remember the compromise we made there?
I remember. So I wanted Jackson, you wanted Cogerton, and I wanted Ficarro, and you wanted someone who is not on the list.
It was Manny. That's what it was. Yeah.
Right. So Ficarro was not in your 20, and Cogerton was not on mine. So, I mean, that's one of the ways that we worked out the differences between our lists. As few as there were, you know, there were some players who appeared on one and not on another. And it was like, all right, well, you know, does it seem reasonable if this person takes this spot and that person takes that spot? And I was like, yeah, I thought Jake Ficarro deserved a spot on the list. I think, you know, even he would say his last game was not his best game.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, like if he was going to submit, you know, a game for, you know, consideration, it might be, you know, maybe he had an excellent game against the Chrome, where he's doing kind of more wide range of stuff, you know, playing like some wing, you know, initiating from up top a little bit more. So, you know, just some outstanding play. And, you know, it just has really good numbers as far as like, you know, assisting from the midfield position and scoring from midfield. It's pretty high up there. So I thought, yeah, I want to keep Ficarro up there. So we traded him off.
Did we rank too many poles?
I mean, I don't think so. I don't really have any regrets about how we did this list. I think, you know, since we didn't have anything kind of restricting us, you know, nobody said this wasn't like an all-American list or something like that.
Right.
You know
what I mean?
Like,
it's not positional. Yeah.
Right. It's like, well, how many poles do you think we should have? And so then, you know, we just tossed up, you know, people who happened to be poles. And, you know, people who, you know, we had Trevor Baptiste, you know, we didn't need a face-off representative. We just both thought Trevor Baptiste was doing really well.
Right.
Yeah, so, I mean, I'm fine with it. And like you said, you know, this was a snapshot that it's already, you know, it's already dissolving, you know, but that's just the way it went. It was for that one particular time. And the funny thing I do mention about the goalie situation, I was like, my first draft, I was like, yeah, I think there's a goalie who cracks the top 20. Like, it literally just said some goalie, and I was going to try to figure it out later.
It did. It did.
But it is funny that you mentioned, you know, like the stats, insistence on stats, because I think it is official now. I have been yelled at, whatever you want to call it, yelled at by a goalie for not considering stats enough, and by another goalie for considering stats too much.
Wow.
There's a sweet spot where goalies reside, where they do want their stats to matter, but not entirely all the time, because, you know, other things do matter as well. Like, you know, if your slide packages are late, or, you know, you're not getting help here or there,
right?
You know, that, you know, leave your goalie out to dry, and, you know, it's percentages go down, you know, sometimes goalies don't want those stats to matter.
Hey, Kyle Bernlohr, how good is your Whipsnakes defense? Because I think they're pretty good. I mean, might have something to do with some of your numbers. Forever. Might have something to do with some of your numbers, bud. Jack and Canada's defense, not good. Not good. Tiebreaker. That's how it happened. Team defense, okay? Team defense, not individual. We wouldn't want to insult individual players. Heaven forbid. Even though that's what you all are asking us to do, weirdly, this year. After, like, we spent 5 years amending our behavior to not do that. Everyone's like, oh, man, it's the year of hot takes. Let's do hot takes. I'm like, hot takes are a little overrated. Hot takes get you in trouble. Hot takes get people threatening you. So I'm okay with that. I'm okay with not having that up there. One guy that stood out that people in lacrosse, like coaches and other players, kind of talked to me about having on this list, and we thought it would like shock a lot of people, but the pros and people in the game were not shocked at all, is Jules Henningberg. And we had him at 12, and we moved him up to 12, and people were like, how is he not top 10? And we're like, I maybe he is. We were shocked that we ended up at 12. Like, we had a lot of conversations about it. And you'd think that it all hinged on his last game where, you know, he dropped 6 goals and an assist, and his team lost against the Atlas. But that's not what it is. We're actually looking at the totality of everything. And when I was at training camp, there was teams trying to trade for him, because when he was on the Whipsnakes at that point, they just didn't want to make any trades in training camp because it would be too confusing for fans. So they didn't do it, period. And then when the time was right, they traded for him and they made a move, and you see his impact immediately. And, you know, for a little bit more on that, we actually have a story in the next issue of Inside the Cross about Jules Henningberg and how, like, his style is so unique and how it developed from him having to use his offhand and make that into his dominant hand, and then going to college and literally no one knowing what hand he was. And it was one of his greatest assets, one of his best assets as a pro as well. It just makes him a multifaceted finisher, scorer, player, dodger. You can't force him down one way. He can go both. And he's one of the few players that is equally as good with both in lacrosse. So look for that. That's written by Patrick McEwen in the next issue of Inside the Cross. Anything else before we never talk about this again until it's our turn to do it again?
I will say, so apparently a lot of people had opinions on him. Thanks for your opinions on him, sincerely. Like, I honestly do mean that. I don't say it was cool for people to say, you know, yeah, I think this guy was higher, but I respect your decision. You know, or I think this guy was lower, but whatever. You know, I would say 90% of the people who commented had, you know, level-headed comments to make and weren't just like, you guys did that because you suck, or, you know, that guy sucks and so do you, or something like that.
Here's a tip. If you're trying to seriously interact with someone that wrote something that actually took time, and clearly we put effort into it, I know you didn't read it. You just looked at the listing. That's fine. I expect that at this point. If you're going to approach the person that wrote that article that may or may not have upset you, don't lead with, this list is a joke. Just like two or three people led with that, and it's like, why does that make me want to respect your opinion? If you're automatically coming out, switching from guns to missiles and just firing off on your first comment, like, just be like, hey, why'd you do this? You know, be a human being. I know it's the internet and you don't have to be, and you can just be a jerk. Like, that's your right. I respect that. But at the same time, like, don't expect a response if you're a jerk. You know, I think I've gotten a lot of that this season for some reason, is people just come in real hot. And then they go, why aren't you responding? And I'm like, because you came in too hot, man. I don't really care. That has to be how it has to be. You know, and that's not changing. So that's just general in life interacting with anyone. Don't come in super hot because you don't know them. And you don't know. Some of the people we talked to had no idea who we were or how long we've been doing this, or like even which players were really good, to be honest with you. still have your opinion, but like have something to back it up. And some, you know, a lot of people did. And I would say, like Chris said, 90% of people came correct and, you know, came with respected the rule of take this guy off, put this guy on. Great. That's a great argument. That's not even an argument. That's a discussion. If you want to have an argument, you can find two other people on the internet to argue with. It's not going to be Rosie and I. I'm going to tell you that right now. That's just how it is. One last thing. I wanted to shout this out. Shout out to the PLL and the MLL for being so cowardly that they refused to retweet this list. Good for you. Petty Hall of Fame. You're both in it. I'm so happy for you. Good job. This was an opportunity for teams, players, and leagues to like actually have an open debate. But instead, this never happened. This didn't happen. Look at all these nice things they wrote about our players. Oh, wait, they wrote about the other league? Screw them. It's not going to sit. It's not going to sit. And we're just going to keep getting angrier and angrier about it until you change. But we're not going to change. We're going to keep doing what we're doing and, you know, working as hard as we can. I got to say, like, please read the articles. Like, it really matters to us that you read them and like show that you, not that you, you don't even have to understand them. Just like read it. Don't go through a list and go, this is stupid. You're stupid. This is dumb. You're stupid. Stupid, stupid, stupid head. That's not the way to do it. Just some tips on how to be, I don't know, a decent person and maybe a little bit of an adult on the internet. Ironically coming from me. And with that vitriol, we are moving on to the recommendation of the week. Good news, I've got some recommendations this week. It's not a dark time. I actually have too many, but I'm going to go with three. So my first one, Chris's kind of niche here is he's a little bit of a food guy. He's going to give you some snacks. He's going to give you some tips there for deliciousness. I'm more of I like comic books. I read comic books. Here's a comic book you can read even if you hate comic books. And that is this week, House of X by Jonathan Hickman. It's a reboot of the X-Men. I know a lot of you guys listening to this, probably your experience with the X-Men is the movies or the, by the way, amazing cartoon show from the 90s, which you should go check out on YouTube. It's free, like all the episodes. Check it out. It's a lot of fun. The theme song is like running through my head right now as I'm talking. But House of X is a great reboot. And even if you don't like comics, you'll like it. It's interesting. It's weird and it's fun. So check that out from Marvel Comics in, I guess, comic shops. I'm sure you can get it online as well. The second thing is I went and saw a huge concert for the first time in probably like a decade. And that concert was Queen, which is really not Queen because Freddie Mercury died like 20 years ago. He was a lead singer. The band has a lot more popularity now because of the movie Bohemian Rhapsody. The bassist also does not play with them, but Roger Taylor and Brian May, the drummer and the guitarist respectively, are headlining this tour. They're both in their 70s. It might be their last tour. I just kind of had to see it, and I thought it would not be good, and I was wrong, and I was happy to be wrong. It was pretty awesome. So I know they played in... I think they played in Jersey the night before. So I think some people, I saw some people posting about it, but it's a fun show. It cost way too much money. I'm not going to lie to you. I wish I could have some of the money back. I can't. But it was a lot of fun. Go check out a huge band if they come near you. It's a rare pleasure. I enjoyed it. I didn't enjoy sitting in the parking lot for like 5 hours, but whatever. And then my final recommendation this week, as I mentioned earlier in the podcast, is the Lake Placid Lacrosse Tournament. I love, love, love Lake Placid. Even if I wasn't playing anymore, I would go just to hang and chill. It's such a, even though I'm kind of from the New England foresty kind of area, it's still such a different vibe over there in Lake Placid. It's a lot of fun, and this is a weekend where people from all generations of lacrosse show up and just have fun. There's not a lot of like negativity. The games are fairly chill, pardon the term. And I love doing it every year. And I'm very fortunate to keep playing in it. I believe this is my 13th year. So I've been doing it as long as I've been covering pro lacrosse, actually. So it's kind of coincidental. But it's a lot of fun. If you get a chance to go, it's probably too late. It is too late to go this year. But next year, put it on the calendar, find a team, check it out. It's a lot of fun. Chris, what's your recommendation of the week?
So I will definitely co-sign on one of yours. I've not read House of X and I've not seen Queen, but I have been to Lake Placid, and it was a phenomenal time. It's a gorgeous part of the country, and I had a great time as well. And I have no idea why I haven't been back. I should really go back and play it again. So my recommendation of this week, I wanted to recommend a TV show, a documentary, but it's two parts and I've only watched the first part, so I don't want it on me if the second part sucks. So I might switch to a TV documentary next week if I get some time to finish it.
All right.
This week. So that being said, going with a product I was just put onto on Sunday, and it's just kind of making its way around stores and stuff now. So it might, like, it was at like some gas station. I don't know, gas stations are the drop sometime. And so it was like at a gas station snack place. And now it's starting to get to a few more. You get your Sheetz and your Wawa kind of places. And ultimately, if it's not there yet, it's going to get to your Walmarts and Targets. And that is Zombie Skittles. Zombie Skittles is the new brand new flavor of Skittle. It's for like, it's like a Halloween tie-in, so you know, obviously it'll be everywhere in the upcoming months, but they're just, like I said, they're putting it out like this week. Mostly delicious, so it's kind of a partial recommendation, right? So you got like punch and melon and blackberry, and there's like some berry flavors and stuff, and those are fantastic. Here's why it's a partial recommendation though: they also threw in a flavor called Rotten Zombie.
Gross.
Yeah, and it's they like intended for it to not be good, you know, so you're just eating, and it's like a random color. You can't, it like, it doesn't look like, you know, decay or something like
that. This sounds horrible. Why are you recommending this?
Because the rest of the Skittles are delicious.
But you don't know what they are.
Well, you know what all of them are. Just, it's just like there's a zombie Skittle that's disguised as one of those Skittles.
Chris, you're telling me that Skittles at this point are as reliable as professional lacrosse stats. That's what you're telling me.
Yes, yes. You will look at them and think they are generally correct, but there will be one that looks correct and is, in fact, one you cannot rely on.
This is an upsetting recommendation. I right. I feel like you need to have a backup recommendation.
No, I'm going to
recommend. No, he says no. No, we're not doing
I'm telling you, the melon is fantastic. The blackberry, black cherry, they're all great. The people who make Skittles are just kind of jerks, and they threw in one flavor that's designed to ruin your day. But the rest of them are great. So that's why it's a partial recommendation. If you never buy them, that's certainly your right. If you do, you'll probably have a good time for most of it. But I feel like it is my role as someone who just, somebody told me about these yesterday and like, and had a pack, and they were like, hey, you gotta try these zombie Skittles. And I was like, okay, this seems new. And so I tried some, and then I was like, I need to tell the people about this because they may not know about it yet. So I couldn't keep that to myself. Is it a recommendation by the very literal sense of the word? Kind of, because some of the flavors are really good.
I mean, it's literally called recommendation of the week, but all right.
Partial recommendation.
Partial recommendation of the week. You know what I saw food-wise that made me think of like this discussion that we would inevitably have right now? I saw pumpkin spice Cheerios, and I just, it was one of those displays where it's in the middle of the aisle. And it's, like, so celebratory, and I just wanted to punch it so hard. It's August. It's too early. It's too early. Can't have it. And it's in the way. First of all, it's in the way. Second of all, it's like, pumpkin spice, the greatest thing ever. It's not. It's not. Stop it. All right. And with that rant against pumpkin spice, we will move on to the end of the show. Chris, where can people find you on Twitter?
You can find me at ChrisRosie22.
And you can follow me at TheKyleDevitt. Come at me with your X-Men takes and not your top 20 takes. Thanks for listening. See you next week.